Al-Anon. My name is Cindy Scott, and I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family group since January 1st of 1983. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting both my husband and I here. I had a lot of comments about now we get to hear the rest of the story or the truth. But the truth is that he has heard, we have been able to share the podium together for so many years that he's starting to get it right. Very, very little do I have to correct. However, I do have a few additional nuggets that you may be interested in. Again, thank you so much for having us, and gosh, you guys are just fabulous. This is beautiful weather, and I'm sure if I was outdoors, it would be even better. In here, it's not much different than home. So I've got my coat on, and I tried to figure out whether I should have a blanket or a coat, because I'm cold, you guys. I don't know about you, but it's a little chilly in this room. However, that means that I won't have you probably nodding off. So I guess there's something good in everything, right? I'd like to tell you that it's all his fault that I'm a member of the Al-Anon program. However, that is simply not true. And I would like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for your program that has allowed me to understand that alcoholism is a family disease and that you gave us the same 12 steps. The way that you have found sobriety is the same way that we can find family recovery. And I just want to thank you for that so much and for sharing the podium with Alcoholics Anonymous. This is absolutely a gift, and I cannot be more grateful. I'd like to thank Jack as well for hosting us. He was right where he was supposed to be when we got to the airport. It just so happened he wasn't right in front of us, and my husband is kind of funny because he gets real nervous. I think that's what it is. But he's always looking around for whoever's supposed to meet us. And so he was looking and he couldn't find anybody. I said, don't worry, we'll get our luggage, we'll hang out, and he'll show up. Well, he's not listening to me, as you know, some things just don't change. And so he's still kind of pacing back and forth and looking around, and that's how he got himself introduced to this strange man that was just simply out there waiting for probably his lovely wife. John was not exactly what he wanted to see. And anyway, Jack came up right on time when we got our luggage, and I just want to say that I love members of Alcoholics Anonymous who have his attitude. He's a man who just excludes the graciousness and the gratitude of living in this program one day at a time. I just love folks in AA. I mean, I cannot tell you. In fact, when I first got introduced to this program, for me, it was not coming to an Al-Anon meeting. I was way too hard-headed for that. Besides that, I was not the sick one. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I didn't really need to be in any Al-Anon meeting. And, you know, the alcoholics are kind of, they're still cunning, baffling, and powerful, because after I had, much later on when I'd gone to a few open A meetings with my husband, they tried to help me to find the doors of Al-Anon. And I didn't take direction very well, so when they pointed down the hall and said, that's where the Al-Anons meet, I just said, uh-huh. And then I sat down in the open AA meeting. And but they don't give up. And finally, they came to me one night after I'd been coming for a few weeks, and they said, you know, this gal over here, her name is Terry. And Terry's husband is new in AA, and she really needs someone to take her to some Al-Anon meetings. Could you do that? Well, of course. Yeah. So off I trotted with Terry over to this Al-Anon meeting, and you know, the funny thing about that is she's not here, to my knowledge, and I'm still here. So thankfully, it does not matter what your motives are. It's just that we get to these meetings, get ourselves in the chair, and open our ears to hear what's being said. And I guess for me, I was the type who couldn't hear it in Al-Anon. Maybe it was too direct for me, so I sort of heard it through the alcoholics, you know, like, that's for him, and it's like, yeah, that's good for him, and one day, lo and behold, I thought, wow, maybe that would work for me, too, and so that's my story, and I'm sorry, I love alcoholics, I always have, and I think I always will, so thank you for allowing us to be a part of your fellowship. I enjoyed Pat's talk last night, because I forget sometimes how much Pat and I have in common, She has the alcohol allergy. I do not. But everything else, you would not know that we were two different people. I was 13. She took her first drink at 13. I took my first alcoholic at 13. Now, he always hates this part of the story, and as you notice, he did leave this out. So this is one of those things I have to add in. And that is that, I was 13 years old when we hooked up together. Now, I have to add the other part is that I lied. I told him that I was 17, going to be 18 in a couple months. And so, I did have a small part in that. However, we started off and we were just head over heels in love. And later, a few months later, when I told him how old I really was, he was hooked because he couldn't leave. And we had started on that obsession together. And I was pretty smart even then. I didn't know what the word manipulating was. I had no idea. I didn't go to school to learn these things, how to manipulate and how to control and how to be self-righteous and all those things that come with the disease of Al-Anon. I did not do that. However, I didn't tell him how old I was until I felt like I had him snagged. I can't even fish, but I tell you what, I caught this one. And, of course, I did not know what I had. And had I known, I would have thrown him back, which is not true. I look back at my life, and it just so happens that I do not know what it's like to live in a normal home, if there are normal homes. But I know that I always lived in alcoholism. My mother was 16 years old when she had me. She was not married. My father was already married, and so she... using her resources, quickly found herself an alcoholic to marry after I was I was 3 months old. And so he was the only person I ever knew. He was my stepdad, and he did not like me. Simply, he took me as because I was part of the package. But my mom and him went on to have three more kids, and it was very clear that he did not like me all along. And then there came some times before my mom left him, that there were things going on that should not be going on with little kids and their stepdads. And so, this just seems to be, this is a part of life for me. This is normal. I don't think anything about it. All I know is that, I'm scared. I'm scared all the time. I don't have any friends. It's a way of life that only unless you have been there can you describe. And that's why I believe that when we come into rooms like these and we sit down, we have this spiritual bonding. There's something inside of us that we all have had that fear. We have all had that emptiness. We've all had that feeling of there's something wrong with me. And I just knew I was no good. I know that I couldn't have a normal life. I seen kids out there enjoying school. I hated school. I don't know about you, but I remember walking to school alone. And then when I got there, I always had my eyes down. I always looked down because I couldn't look anybody in the eye. I was just afraid of people. And everybody was laughing in the halls. And there was no, I was not a part of that. Lunchtime. Oh, I hated lunchtime. Because then, that's when you sit with your friends. And I didn't have any friends. And so there was just all these parts of my life that I just endured. I hated it, didn't want to be there, but, you just endure it. And so I guess that's why when I was at a very young age, I was prime. I was looking to be needed. And what better person can you find to need than an alcoholic? I understand the disease of alcoholism to be a very needy disease. Alcoholic, he was perfect. We fit together like a hand in a glove. And how it worked is my mom left my dad when I was about 8 due to the stuff that was going on. And I look back at that and sometimes, the more I know about alcoholism, the more I understand the what it took for my mom to leave. Because I have seen over and over and over again in alcoholic homes where the mom cannot take the children's side. The mom has to stay with the alcoholic at whatever cost. And that's the pain of our disease. Alcoholism totally destroys families. It causes harm. We come here fragile and broken, broken people. Our pieces are shattered. And, there is love in these rooms. And you walk in this door, and it's yours. You don't have to do anything to get it. All you have to do is just be. And that's the healing that takes place. And, because of recovery, there's healing in our lives today. The alcoholics are always funny, so I heard a lot of laughter earlier when my husband was talking, but to me that laughter is healing. And all of us who have come here, that we've been able to begin to pick up those pieces, and God has put those pieces back together. And how does that happen? I love your theme, Together We Can. Because you see, of and by myself, I can't do that. I came here to you, and I just simply put myself in the middle of you, and you guided me, you helped me to become the person I am today. And it just so happens that I like myself today. I really like being who I am, and I love being who I'm with. My life has taken a total change. And how do you get from point A to point B? So here this 13-year-old girl is sneaking out of the house, and I show up at a dance, this first live band that, you know, that I have ever seen. It was a real excitement. My girlfriend, the one girlfriend I had, who, by the way, also comes from an alcoholic home, her and I used to pass each other on the way to school the whole school year. And the last day of school, we finally talked to each other, and we, you know, told each other what we'd been thinking. And then she says, "God," she said, "you were so stuck up." And I said, "Me? What about you?" I, you know, that was the idea, the perception that we had of each other. And both of us were just scared to death. Both of us come from those places in alcoholism where you just live in total fear. Well, anyway, we developed this friendship, and my husband and I. We'd gone to this dance because she had told me this live band was coming to town. And so I snuck out, and she didn't have to because her parents weren't even aware of what she was doing. And so we went to the dance, and there he was. And I'm telling you what, that was the one. He had these beautiful blue eyes, and the black lights from the band, you know, would show, and he had this long hair, and his wiring glasses looked just like John Lennon. This was back in the 60s. They even let him sing one song. I remember that one song, but it was just, I just melted. And so that was the beginning of my obsession. 13 years old, and the persuasion that a pre-Al-Anon has, you know, don't ever underestimate us, because we are not weak. We actually have, we want something, and we will set about to get it. And some people have inferred that we are like samurai warriors. And, you know, that was me. That was me. I didn't exactly have the sword, but I used many things to take its place. And as it turned out, we didn't get together that night because after the dance I had to run home. Now, he knew there was something strange going on in his life because there was this girl who stood down in front of the stage and stared at him for 3 hours. The only time was when they took a break. They went out. The guys went outside later to smoke dope, I found out. But anyway, they went outside, and I took a break, rested my eyes for a minute, and then when the band started up, I was back at it again. And so I left that night without ever seeing him. But the next day, we ran into each other. I happened to be downtown, and the band was downtown doing something, and one thing led to another, and we were at the same stoplight at the same moment. And you know, it's just I need to tell you. God has a plan, that's all I can tell you. Now, looking back, I didn't think it was a very good plan, but, you know, it really is true. We have been meant to be together. We are two people who, through alcoholism, we survive without killing each other, barely. And for whatever reason, we've been fortunate enough to be able to share this program of recovery together. And I look at it, and I look at our children's lives, and I look at the people, the friends, and the people we sponsor, and it's really evident to me that God can truly bring something good out of tragedy and devastation. And so we got together, had a whirlwind courtship. Of course, I'm, like I said, 13, and so we're having to do this sneaking around. Finally, when a year later, I brought him home, introduced him to my mom, because, you know, at that time, I felt like I was able to take her into my confidence that I had a boyfriend. And she was a single mom. She had 4 kids. She had somebody living with her at the time, and, you know, she didn't know what to do with those kids. And so I think she really liked him. She really, really liked him. And I think that she felt that he was a good man. And I think she felt that I was going to be okay with him. And so when I asked if we could get married, she agreed. And I look back at that and I think, I would never let my kids get married that young. And yet, at the same time, because of you, I understand alcoholism. And I can see through her eyes. It was not, she did not do this because she did not love me. She truly did this because she did love me. And she had no other resources. When she left my stepdad, that's when we moved to Montana. And, you know, she was a barmaid at night. I was the one that took care of the kids during the day. And it was just, she was just trying to cope with the disease that she didn't even know that she had. And so John and I, in Montana, you can get married with the parents' signature at 16. So we began our life together. When the day that I turned 16 years old, went down, got the marriage license. And so, you know, we've been together for 37 years. And, you know, that's a direct result of being here with you and doing what we do. He explained a little bit of what it was like when we came to you. It was not good. Now, you know, he gave you a little bit of an idea of our relationship, and it is true. We started out madly in love, and then by the time we got to you, I hated him and he hated me. And some things had happened in between. You know, alcoholism had progressed. I tried really, really hard to feel like I was a good wife, because I knew that that's why he drank. And I did all the things that you do. I buy the books. I cry. I be nice. I try to put guilt on it. I mean, I used all those things. I did everything I knew how. I was grasping with the only set of tools that I had. And that was all based on self-reliance, I come to find out. I was trying to make something work. I was trying to beat alcoholism. And I had no idea what the first step means. Powerless over alcohol? No, not me. I just need to do the right thing, say the right thing. Ah, if he had a child, if he just had that son. How many of us have brought children into the disease of alcoholism because we thought that was a solution? And so I did that. Now, he wasn't too interested in it at the time. He didn't want any kids, and I later learned that alcoholics don't really like responsibility very much. And so, you know, but it didn't matter, because I always knew what was best. And I knew that if he had the son, that it was going to be okay, and our life was going to settle down into whatever my perception of normal was. And I thought mainly we were going to be happy. And so I got pregnant, even though he wasn't wanting to start a family yet, and of course, I knew when I told him it'd be okay. Well, I was sort of, I guess I surprised myself. I thought I knew him better than I did. He was a little upset at the time. But it didn't matter. We went on and we had this, it wasn't a son, it was a daughter. A beautiful little girl who just, I had no idea that my heart could expand and love so much. I mean, for those of you who have had your first child, to think back to that moment, it's a miracle. It's a spiritual experience. And I was not, at that time, I was not doing well with God. But this was truly a spiritual experience for me. And I knew in my heart that everything was going to be okay now. It was all going to be okay. And of course, you know, he was there with me when she was born. And then after she was born, he said, well, do you mind if I go back to the poker room? The guy's down there expecting me, and I need to pass out cigars. And, you know, just something inside of me, that little twinge, but then I pushed it away. It's like, you know, it's okay, you go. And, you know, I just one more time, you just swallow that disappointment, because I really wanted him to be there with me. But I knew that I couldn't, I had long since, you know, quit trying to make that thing work. And so he went off and he passed out cigars and he did his thing. We brought this little girl home and, you know, and the drinking did not stop. He wanted to go out. I didn't care at that time, because I had something to replace that obsession of him. I had this little baby. And so what I did is I poured out all my time and attention and love on this baby. And eventually she began to be resistant. She, you know, all of a sudden our relationship, when she was a baby, we got along fine. But once she started getting a little independent, we started butting heads. And I really did not know, I didn't understand what that was about. After I came into these rooms, I understood. Because you see, today, John told you, our daughter is in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had birthed a beautiful little alcoholic. And I believe that she was alcoholic from day one. She just, oh, she maxed me out. I tell you, she needed more attention. She was demanding. She was just, you know, but it was okay at the time, because I devoted all my energy to her. I took it off the alcoholic, and I'm sure, you know, that gave him time to get out there and really practice his stuff. And so one day I look, and all of a sudden it's like, man, he's never home. He's drinking all the time. I'm getting tired of being home all by myself. And so, you know, it's just this, I don't know what to do. So what do? Well, it wasn't a boy. That's what the problem was. It wasn't his son. If it was a son, it would be different. So we have a little boy this time. And, you know, and guess what? That didn't do it either. And this little boy was totally different. He was quiet. He was the, you know, the easygoing child that just was just the love of my life. And so, you know, we go on, and pretty quick, it's like I've got this unrest again, and I'm not happy, and I'm home all the time, and I just feel something inside of me that is irritable, restless, and discontent. And so I'm thinking to myself, you know what? This is not going to work. This marriage is no good. I was too young when I picked out this guy. And I'm gonna get old here, and so I need to find me one that's gonna work. And you know, that's pretty easy when you're in alcoholism, when you're at the bars all the time. There's a lot going on there, and none of it's good. And so, you know, I ended up with my marriage vows that I broke them, and I meant them from the bottom of my heart when I took those marriage vows. But you know what? I pushed them aside, and it became unimportant. Just like everything in my life, I wanted to be a person of morals and values. I wanted life to be good, and little by little, I just kept giving away a piece of myself. And you know what? I was desperate. I was desperate for love and affection. And so, lo and behold, you know, I ended up doing the one thing that I never, ever, ever, ever wanted to do. And the worst part of that was the pain that I created in someone else's life. And I don't want to ever, ever see that look on anybody's face again that I have done myself. I hurt my husband deeply, and yet I was convinced that he didn't care. I had myself so convinced that it's like I when alcoholics talk about believing the lie, I understand what that means, because in my head, I expected nothing. I expected no reaction. I expected, you know, that he just simply didn't care. And what I found out was is that I hurt him more than anything that had ever happened to him before. And so that began the really wildness of the alcoholism. That's when we began to go at each other with a vengeance. It was horrible. He talked about me pulling out the baseball bat when I came home at night. And you know, the truth of the matter is I did not know what to do, but I just wanted him to be gone. I hurt, and I wanted him to hurt, and I just wanted him to get out of my life, go away. And so there were times that I thought I had a pretty good solution. And that is, in Montana, it used to be cold, really, really cold. We've since our weather's changed, and we don't have those 30 below nights like we used to. And then we always had this ritual, you know, we'd go out, he'd get drunk, and then he'd go climb into the car in the back seat, pass out, and I'd drive home. And so this particular night, he did the same thing. He got in the back seat, passed out. I drove home, and I was just seething all the way. And I thought, you know, it would be so much easier if he wasn't around. And so when I got home and I pulled into that garage, the idea just hit me. I'll just leave him out here. And it won't even hurt. You know, he'll just get all numb, and his blood will quit flowing, and my problems will be solved. He'll be gone. I mean, when I look back at this sometimes, it made so much sense to me. And so I quietly got out of the car and put my hand over the dome light, so I didn't want anything to wake him. Not that it would. And I quietly shut the door, and I slipped into the house, and I crawled into bed, and I cannot tell you when I had such a peaceful feeling. I mean, it's like it's all going to be okay. In the morning, I'm going to wake up, and everything is going to be fine. Well, sometime in the middle of the night, he would crawl in like an ice cube next to me trying to warm up, and of course, I'd kick him, and I just thought, oh, you know, it failed again. It's just like every time I try to find happiness, something screws it up. And so we're home, and we're a couple weeks later. I'm fixing lunch in the kitchen. The kids are screaming and like they always do and playing. They're kids. They're just playing, but their sounds are like screams to me. And I'm just so unhappy. And so I grab this broom and I go outside because there's mud swallows that like to fly around our house. And in the bedroom, there's big corner picture windows, and they get there and build these nests. And they just get, the windows are filthy because they drop poop all over, and it's just terrible. So I'm out there, and I'm going to clean these nests off. And so I'm taking my aggression out on these birds. And we had a trailer court about a quarter of a mile down where you could visually see it. We were on a hill. And this is where all the hired help lived on the ranch. There's a trailer court down there, and they all these trailers are lined up. And so I'm out there, and it's kind of a spring day, and I mean, I've got this broom, and I am just beating this window, trying to get these nests, and I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. And I swear, the trailer court's got these people coming out, and they're going, oh, man, what is going on up there? And I've gone into a rage, is what I've done, and I'm totally beside myself. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this movement right next to me, and there he is. Now, he was in bed, passed out, and then you could see where he had just pulled his jeans on, and he came out, and he was standing there, and he had a gun in his hand. He had a rifle in his hand. And I looked over at him, and he just gave me that furious look, and I just matched him. I stared him right back, and I just looked him right in the eye, and I said, "Are you going to shoot or what?" And he had the gun pointed at me. So, again, there's no insanity on my part. How could you think I need Al-Anon? Well, he obviously did not. What he did was he pointed the gun up in the air and shot it off at the same time. And I just turned around and went back into the house and fixed lunch. I mean, I nearly lost my life. But you know what? I was insane. I was totally insane with the family disease of alcoholism. And so you see, for us, we had a real problem in our home. And it wasn't just the alcoholic. It wasn't just the fact that he was drinking. And the reason I can tell you that is because when he stopped drinking, it got worse. When he stopped drinking, I hated him more, if that's even possible. Because I didn't know what to do then. I mean, when you have guilt, you can manipulate that. And I did that. Like you said, you never asked me what he did last night, because I love to embellish it. And I would tell him blow by blow, detail by detail, how he swung the banker's wife around the dance floor, and when he twirled her, she went flying and hit the wall. I mean, how do you like that? But it was true. However, what I did not tell him was that she'd also had a few drinks too. So. But, you know, it just got to the point where our children paid quite the price for that, because they were living in this home. And they were living in a home where there is that no laughter. There is either dead silence where nobody's speaking, or else there's that screaming and that yelling. And I would send them to their room many times. They'd be in there playing, and we would just scream at each other. And I just thought, well, you know what? They can't hear us because they can't see us. That is so untrue. I had no idea how neurotic I was making my children. And it says in the Al-Anon literature that a lot of times you can recognize alcoholism in a family far more from the non-alcoholic than you can the alcoholic. You see, I was very, very sick, and I did not know it. And so my husband, he talked a little bit about his when he finally could not do it anymore. He was done. He couldn't do it anymore. So he went to this old friend, Frank, as he talked about it. And I have to tell you, I've done some visiting around this weekend and talked to people, and we've shared some of the miracles that have happened. Frank was somebody John had drank with, but Frank also had a wife. You know, I remember a time, so many years even before we came into the program, that her and I were in a particular bar. And, of course, we were sitting there, the wet blankets, the nags, you know, watching because as our husbands were drinking, and we were just glaring at them, and we couldn't even talk to each other because we were so busy glaring at our husbands. But I remember her sitting there beside me and us not exchanging any words. And it was only just within this year, or last year, it would be 2006, lo and behold, guess who comes walking in the doors? And the reason she came through those doors is her and her husband divorced a long time ago. And her husband had they've been talking to each other because they have children that suffer from alcoholism. So they have been talking back and forth. And her husband, Frank, said to her, you know, you need to go to Al-Anon. And she says, I've been to Al-Anon. And I'm not going back because all they do is talk about the problems. They always talk about it. She says, it does not feel good when I go there. And so he says, well, you need to go to Cindy's group. And anyway, she told this story, and I had to laugh. But the point, I guess, that I realized was is that I started this group that she went to. And this group is based on something that I needed. I had gone to the Al-Anon groups in Billings once the alcoholics finally got me to walk in their doors. And there was not, I'd been to enough open AA meetings that I knew what it should say. I knew you should feel better. I knew that there should be laughter. I heard laughter in your meetings. I seen your eyes sparkle. You shook my hand. You talked to me. You made me feel good. So I knew what that was like. And in this Al-Anon meeting that I went to, there was a lot of people there, but nobody came up and introduced himself. Nobody came up to me and shook my hand and said, welcome, glad you're here. No one talked about sponsorship, the 12 steps. There was no solution there. There was no hope there. And so anyway, she had been to these types of meetings, and she did not want to go back. And so when she came to the group that I had started, based on those principles, sponsorship, working in the 12 steps, and working with others, those were the three things that I wanted in a home group. And you know, if your home group doesn't have what you need, then maybe what we need to do is get out there and make it ourselves. And that's what I was taught, and that's what I did. And so I seen her, and she told me, she said, I tell you what, she came up and talked to me, and I introduced her to somebody I sponsored because this person didn't have anybody right now, and I knew that she'd have a lot of time for her, and so I hooked them up together. It is so beautiful. She gets up behind that podium. She says, oh, my sponsor is so wonderful, and she has helped me so much. And I mean, she just bubbles over about this my sponsor. And, you know, the thing is she is working the 12 steps. And this woman whom crossed my path years and years and years and years ago has come back into my life. And I look at her, and God, to me, it's like John talked about the miracles. She is a miracle. And her path took a lot of different turns than mine. We stayed together, but she divorced. And, you know, and she's lost a child. A child died because of alcoholism. And she still couldn't get here. And so it's been many years, and now she's finally, you know, ready. She's at the end of wherever Al-Anonism takes us, where she's ready for help. And she came, and it's there for her. And there's nothing that touches my heart more to know that there are places where people like us can go. And I'm going to tell you something. I need to know that this is here for my children, because I have children. And I have grandchildren now. I was a new grandparent in 2005 and in October. And I'll tell you what, if your children isn't enough incentive, then I know what the grandkids are, because I know that being a grandparent is, oh my God, I never knew the experience existed, and I would not have this. Because that same child that made me a grandmother is the child that was the alcoholic that we fought. And I will guarantee you that if it wasn't for this program, her and I would not be speaking today. Because that's where it was at when I came in. She hated me, and I was so angry with her. Her childhood was spent with me yelling at her, pulling her hair because she wouldn't stand still when I was trying to comb her hair in the bathroom. I was not a good mother. And all I did with my kids is I just pushed them further away because of alcoholism. But because of a program in the 12 steps, I've been able to make amends to those kids. And those kids are a part of my life today. And we love each other, and we love to spend time with each other. On my 50th birthday, that was I'm not telling you where. It was a little, not too long ago. Anyway, no, the only reason I'm saying that is because I can't think of the date right now. That's part of being the 50s, right, and older. But anyway, my kids all met me. John and I were speaking in Jekyll Island, and so we decided to go over to Florida, where Disney World is, and that's where I wanted to go. John and I went there on our honeymoon. Remember, I was 16 when I married, so I was still a child at heart. I'd never been to Disneyland, so that's where we went. And so on my 50th birthday, that's what I wanted to do. And the kids, Becky lives in Iowa, and the other two boys, they were in Billings, or Bozeman, which is a couple hours from Billings, but they all got on a plane, and they met us at Disney World on their own dime. Can you imagine that? My kids paid their own way for my birthday. And you know, it really meant so much to me. We had such sorrow in the growing up years with them. And it's such a gift to be able to have them in our life today and to be, you know, to do it differently. I watched the relationship with my husband and my sons, and oh man, my sponsor worked with me on that, because this is what I do. I get in the middle of everything. We were talking about earlier how much better we got along after our children left home, because we had such a differing idea on how to raise these kids. And you know, I come from a place where my mom had no idea about discipline. If you don't see it, you don't have to worry about it. And you know, and her way of dealing with it was is just scream, and I mean, she just get hysterical, and I mean, she had no idea of discipline or what to do. And so that's the tools I got. And my deal is you know, I when I get really mad, then I can get on them. But until then, it's like, oh, they didn't mean it, or you know, don't be so hard on them. Or I'd give them some punishment, and then I couldn't fall through with it. It's like then when the time came, I just couldn't do it. Whereas my husband had a different kind. His mother was a great disciplinarian. It was his mother, not the dad, that disciplined him, and she believed in not sparing the rod. And you know, so consequently, he did too. But I'll tell you something: if you take the consequences of either one of us, I'll take that way, his way, any day over what was happening with me, because my kids manipulated me, and it was awful because we. You know, they didn't know, it's like my husband one day said, they don't know what no means. And for me to put my children out into this world without knowing what no is, without being able to respect, that's another quality. John talked about his sponsor taught him. You know, these are things I learned in here. You actually gave me the tools in which to raise my kids. And I was fortunate enough because when we came into recovery, my son was 3, my daughter was 6, and we didn't have this last one yet. And so, you know, I feel as though there was a lot that we were able to repair as they were growing up. However, the big book says there's a long road of reconstruction ahead. And it is true. It took us for many, many years while we were going to meetings and we were trying to get recovery for ourselves. Things were not very good at home. And I can tell you that there were many nights that I pulled out of the driveway to go to a meeting, and my heart was heavy because I thought, I'm leaving my kids. I was leaving my kids all the time because I was going to these meetings like my sponsor had asked me to do, and I felt like I was abandoning my kids. But she helped me to see that I had abandoned my kids in alcoholism. I left them with babysitters. I eventually hired a live-in babysitter to come in so that I could be free to jump up and go whenever the alcoholic went, because you know, alcoholics are spontaneous and you never know when they're going to drink. You never know, but they're always looking for the moment. And so I had to be ready, because if he's going, I got to go so I can keep an eye on him. And so, you know, one more time, the kids are a problem. So we get solutions, get a live-in sitter. And so this person was there all the time, so I could go whenever he went. And I just was not there for my kids. And I remember one of the guys that we drank with pretty consistently said that he one time said to me, he said, you know, as a mom, you shouldn't be leaving those kids like that. And I hated him so bad, and I said something really smart to him, and I just thought, don't you dare judge me. But the truth of the matter is he was right, because I was not being a parent. I was in the middle of alcoholism myself, and I couldn't do any better than what I was doing. And so our kids got to be a part of recovery. When this thing that happened between John and I, where we got to that, you know, we hated each other. It's funny how God is able to come in when we finally just quit. And that's sort of what happened. He talked about the moving in and out, that I brought my mother into this. I moved into her home when we fought. And so I brought alcoholism right into her home. And again, the amends step helped so much because I was able to make that right with her and ask her forgiveness and be able to change. Amends is change. It's not I'm sorry. I heard I'm sorry all the time in alcoholism. I never said it because I wasn't. It wasn't my fault. But I heard it. I heard it a lot. And it wasn't until I actually came to open AA meetings and sat in those rooms that I began to really hear the amends of an alcoholic. I could not hear my husband because I was sick and tired of words. But when I listened to other alcoholics, recovering alcoholics that got up behind the podium here and shared what they had done to their families and how it hurt them and how bad they felt, I was able to hear and I was able to heal. And that's why I guess it was necessary for me to go to those open AA meetings before I went down on. I was too angry, and I could not hear what you had to say. Eventually, though, there came a time, an Al-Anon, I'm not going to call myself an Al-Anon, an Al-Anon is a member who goes to meetings on a regular basis. They work the 12 steps of AA. In other words, they practice the fifth tradition. We try to encourage and understand our alcoholics, and we try to comfort families of alcoholics. That's what an Al-Anon member is. What I was a person who was married to an alcoholic. And I was going into those open meetings, and I was listening for him, I confess, in the beginning. But eventually, I sat in that chair long enough that I began to hear something for me. And I seen the living examples that was in that room. I knew these people. I got to be a part of their lives, and I heard some of the difficulties they were dealing with. I heard some of the tragedies that had happened, and I watched the support as they gathered around each other. And it touched me so deeply. I knew that this was someplace that I could find some peace. I knew that this was someplace that I could find some happiness, but also knew from those meetings that there was work to do. And that I couldn't just sit there. It was not going to happen just by coming in and sit in that chair. Mary Pearl talks about you can go and sit in a garage day after day after day and you will not become a car. And you know, I can come in and I can sit in these rooms night after night after night and I will not become a member of Al-Anon until I actually pick up the tools. And that's where sponsorship came in. I told you God has a plan, and I laughed when I told you how John and I met and how we were obsessed with each other and just stayed in each other's life, and somehow we didn't kill each other. And yet, you know, we came to you, and there was nothing there. There was nothing left of that marriage whatsoever. His sponsor worked with him, and eventually, I kept going to meetings, and we went to this conference, and Dick is such a big part of my recovery, because long before I even knew who he was or John knew who he was, we went to a conference in the far end of Montana, and Dick happened to be taping that conference. And I was up at the tape table, and that was about the time that I'd gone to, you know, enough meetings in open AA that there's something here. And so I'd gone into the Al-Anon portions of that conference, and we were talking. I heard myself share out loud, and I didn't know I was going to say this, but it's just where I was at. And I said, you know, I've been around Al-Anon for a long, long time, but I've never been in it. And it was an aha for me. It's just like all of a sudden I had that moment of clarity. And so we were out in the lobby, and Dick had his table set up just like he does over here. And I went over on that table, and I looked, and there were Al-Anon 12-step studies. I couldn't believe it, because I had come from meetings. I'd been to all the meetings that Billings had. Never did they talk about steps. Never did they talk about sponsorship. Simply because no one was doing that. They hadn't, it wasn't that they didn't. They just did not have the experience. And so I grabbed a set of 12-step tapes, and I was going to take them home so I could study them, right? And I was going to become an Al-Anon member. And so as I went up to pay for him, Dick looked at him and he said, "Do you know this person?" I said, "No, never heard of her." He said, "I think you'll like these better." And he reached over, he grabbed another set, and he exchanged them. And that's been my sponsor since then till today. And that sponsor took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to tell you that our fifth tradition does not say the 12 steps of Al-Anon. It's the AA 12 steps that brings recovery into our life, just like it brings sobriety into yours. And so I got busy with this sponsor, and she had me read the AA 12 and 12, the AA Big Book, the Al-Anon 12 and 12, and the Al-Anon, pieces of Al-Anon literature which has the steps in them. And so I read all this literature, and then she began to have me write them out, and we got together and we took these steps. And I have to tell you that I had been going to these Al-Anon meetings, like I said, sort of around about, and I had 5 years I was doing this without a sponsor. And when I got that sponsor that first year, more happened for me. There was more results in that first year than happened since I'd been here that five. I could not believe what was happening for me. And lo and behold, you know, our marriage, as I said, sobriety was worse than the drinking. Well, now, as I began to quit looking at him and how many meetings he was going to, oh, that was a big one in our home. Fact is, there were many times I barred the door. It's like, you're not going. You're going to stay here and be the father that you're supposed to be. It's time you be that husband that you missed out on. You know, it's my turn. And bless his heart, he did have a good sponsor who said to him, "You know what? She is sick, but you can't tell her that," he said. And of course, you know how that goes. He was more than obliged to do that. But he told him that, you know, his AA had to come first. And he said, you tell her that you love her, but that your Alcoholics Anonymous meetings have to be first or she won't have anything. And so that's exactly the stand he took. And I'll never forget the time he walked out that door, and I just have to laugh. He talks about his immaturity. Well, I guess we do have something in common. Because after he walked out that door, I just started screaming up at God, kicking, stamping my feet, throwing things around the house. I mean, I just went insane. And I finally screamed at God. I said, "What do you want from me?" And all I know is at that moment, it's like I was spent. And finally, there was just a peace that came over me, and it's just like, I'm just gonna go to a meeting. And that's what I did. At that point, I gave up. I gave up trying to have it my way. I gave up trying to get the alcoholic to be sober the way I wanted him to be, and I began to see what I could do for me. And I was ready. I was ready to listen. I was ready to have someone give me directions. And so that was the journey that I began with my sponsor. I've been here for 24 years, and I got her when I was 5 years old in the program. So, you know, I'm growing up slowly, but I can tell you that she is still an example to me. She's still someone I want to be like when I grow up. She's had problems with her daughter and alcoholism, and lo and behold, I didn't know that I was going to need that help in time. I have a son right now, the one that I told you we didn't have when we came to the program. He's a sobriety boy. That was another, you know, Al-Anons, we really do like to, we just know best. And I just, you know, I forget to ask people things. I just kind of go and do what I think is best for everybody. But anyway, John told me one day, he was newly sober, and he says, I'd like another chance at this parenting thing. I think we should have another child. And I said, no way. I mean, I had these kids were, you know, they were up old enough, 6 and 3, and it's like, I don't want to go through babyhood again. I don't want to go through diapers and stuff. And so I told him no, and then I got to thinking about it, and just like I do with my kids, it's like, oh, that, I shouldn't be so hard, and yeah, that's probably okay, all right, I think I will. And so I got pregnant. Well, then I told him, and he says, whoa, I said, well, don't you remember? Do you know alcoholics say things in passing they don't really mean? I mean, they're just thinking about it, it pops out, and then it's gone. Too late now. So we have this sobriety baby, and boy, let me tell you, he has never seen his dad drink. But this kid is the spitting image of his dad. He only has two when he drinks. He don't have a problem, and just because you're in AA, Dad, you think I am an alcoholic. I mean, we've had these conversations with him because we spot it. I mean, when you don't spot it, you got it. He's got all the symptoms, got all the signs. But he's, today he's just doing okay. But because of you, because of his John's sponsor and because of my sponsor, we're able to love him and we're able to keep the door open so he can come. He just spent a week with his dad. He went down, they took a load of horses to Texas, and they were together, the two of them, the whole week. And my son opted to do this on his own. He likes being with his dad, and this is not because of us. What John and I do is we push our kids away from us. We did that. When we came to you, our kids, they were scared of him, and they were always at odds with me. And now today, they have gotten to a place where they actually look at us like maybe we know something. One of them is 27, so, they kind of grow up a little bit and get better, but the one that's 22, I mean, he still has all the answers, but he really does respect his dad and mom, and I'm just amazed at that, because it isn't anything that I learned. I did not pass that on to him. You gave that to us. You gave us a family. We've gone through our ups and downs. A couple years ago, John was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and again, the phone calls. Boy, I'll tell you what, thank God. Thank God that we were in the middle of the fellowship here, because what happened is you surrounded us. You got us through a time that just was terrifying. And we didn't have to be at each other's throats. Instead, we were supportive. And I'll tell you something, alcoholics are the most sensitive, loving people. My husband says to me, we were sitting at dinner, and I could not believe it. I'm just trying to, just not think, not deal with it. And he looks at me and he says, "Are you okay? How are you doing with this?" And I just lost it. I just thought, how can you be concerned with how I'm feeling? You're the one that is going through this trial. I mean, this program helps us to get to a place where it's not about us anymore. And when we do that, we can have the relationships we've always wanted. Relationships are a part of life. And my relationships, I kept everybody out here because I was so afraid of anybody getting close. And my marriage suffered for it because my husband always, he never felt like I was close. And I didn't know how to let him. And yet through this process of recovery, we're growing old together. And I'll tell you what, I have got my best friend by my side. And we were blessed, that a couple months later he had the surgery got through that, and then he just wasn't feeling right, and I said, well, maybe you're just, maybe it's just from the surgery. They told you it was going to take you a while to get back on your feet, to heal, and so he just went to the doctor one day, because he says, I don't know what it is, and he called me, and he says, would you meet me at the heart doctor? He said, the stress test, they couldn't get it down, so I'm at the heart doctor. I went over there, and they put him under and put a stent in his heart, and so, alcoholics were there, Al-Anons were there, the phone was ringing. I mean, in a split second, this happened in the middle of the day. You're there. It's like you're there in emergency. You're there at the moment. Where else do you get this? We've been in the hospital and seen the patients that are in there that have little to no visitors. And they generally, and I'm sure you know what this is like, they generally have to kick us out because we load the room up. And then there's all this laughter coming out of the room. The nurses come running down the hall. What is going on in here? You got to go. You got to get out of here. I mean, we just aren't there for each other. This is family recovery. And I just, I cannot thank you enough for inviting us here to share our story. There's so much that has happened in the 24 years that I I am not able to tell you everything. I can tell you simply that we're doing well together today. We love each other. Our children, again, my daughter's made me a grandmother, and well, I guess he's a grandfather too. I guess I'll share him. And our two boys are doing as well as can be expected. I mean, I give them to God every day. The one thing that happened this year, or this is New Year, so in 2006, that really touched me, because you see, if you stay here, you're always going to have a challenge. You're going to have reprieves. Life will be good, but you never know. The phone can ring, and your life can change in a split instant. And last October, the phone rang. And it was, actually the phone rang, and then it hung up. And because of caller ID, my husband looked at it, and he could see it's from Texas. It was from his folks' home, and his dad hadn't been doing well. In fact, as we went down last Thanksgiving, because we thought maybe this might be his last Thanksgiving. He just hasn't been of good health. And anyway, he called back, and at that time, his sister answered, and they were in the middle. They were working on his mom. She appeared to have had a heart attack. And the emergency people were there working on her at that moment. And changed our life. She told you I got married when I was 16, and she was like my own mother. My mother really couldn't be there for me. Even all these years, she tries, but she suffers from alcoholism and the family disease. And so she does the best that she can. But John's mom took me when we first got married, and she took me to the grocery store. We bought groceries, and she took me school shopping, because I was only I got married in my sophomore summer. So my junior year, she took me school shopping and bought me all the school clothes. My mom never did that. She didn't have the money. And so she made my life fun. You know, she put into my life what I was always missing. And I miss her a lot. It's like losing my own mother. But the thing that sticks with me is how she treated me when we met, because I was 13 and John was 19 at the time. And she never, ever looked her nose down at me. She never judged me. I lived on the south side of town. She lived up under the Rim Rocks. That was the very nice homes. And she was one of the most generous, gentle ladies I've ever met. And she, every time she seen me, she would always say something to me about how nice I looked or how my clothes. I mean, she always had a positive, and all she'd say what a good wife I was to her son. And she always took my side over her son's side. Oh, those boys, she says, I tried to raise them right. I'm so sorry. She was my mom. And I have two boys today that both have girlfriends, and they're living together. God. And this is so hard for me because I raised them better than that. Now, forget about what their dad and I did, okay? That doesn't matter. I want my boys to be, I want them to honor women. I want them to be committed. I want them to be men that have respect. And so they're living with these girls, and I have never treated those girls the way that my mother-in-law treated me. Those girls know they're not family. I've not been rude to them. I have not, not at all, but I have not welcomed them into my life like my mother-in-law did. And so she left me with an example of what I want to be like. And God willing, I have made some changes. And I'm buying birthday gifts, and I'm taking time, Pat, with picking out Christmas presents. I'm not just buying the sweater. I'm really trying to get to know them and, try to get personal with them. And so there's always lessons here in life. I'm never going to be through recovering from the family disease of alcoholism. And it's all about my relationships. I have a lot of people I sponsored that that give me a quality of life that allow me to keep looking at who I am. And as I try to help them, try to pass this program on to them, I think I get more than I give. And so for that, I'm truly grateful. And I want to thank you all for sitting here and listening to us. And thank you for a wonderful weekend. I'm looking forward to the rest of it. Thanks.